Radio 4. It's 8 o'clock and now a seasonal offering.
Look up the word meaningless in Roget's thesaurus and you'll find a string of colourful alternatives such as bosh,
bilge,
bunkum,
piffle,
rubbish,
trash,
nonsense,
moonshine,
folderol,
flapdoodle,
flummery,
fiddle-faddle,
fudge and
humbug.
Humbug. A word inseparably associated with Charles Dickens' character Ebenezer Scrooge, for whom the most frightful example of humbug was the festivity of Christmas.
I'll tell you how Christmas ought to be. What is all this talk about a day off? Employees think so inconsistently. If they don't work on Christmas Day, then we shall take it from their pay. That's the way Christmas ought to be. Bah, humbug! Bah, humbug! No Christmas carols for me! Bah, humbug! That's my song, and I'll sing it happily!
Humbug! Brian Sibley presents a celebration of Charles Dickens' perennially popular story, A Christmas Carol, and of its many interpretations on radio, record, stage, and film. Humbug!
That's it!
Humbug, humbug,
humbug,
humbug,
humbug,
humbug,
humbug,
humbug,
humbug, humbug, humbug, humbug. I hate people, I loathe people, I despise and abominate people. Life is full of cretinous wretches earning what their sweatiness fetches. Empty minds whose pettiness stretches further than I can see. Little wonder I hate people, and I don't care if they hate me.
Ebenezer Scrooge, perhaps Dickens' most memorable creation, whose name has entered the dictionaries as a synonym for all that is mean and miserly.
Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge.
A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner.
Hard and sharp as flint, from which no steel had ever struck out generous fire. Secret and self-contained and solitary as an oyster.
The cold within him froze his old features, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheek, stiffened his gait, made his eyes red, his thin lips blue, and spoke out shrewdly in his grating voice.
A suitable case for treatment if ever there was one, and Scrooge's eventual reformation is accomplished by the intervention of four somewhat unlikely ambassadors who were to give the book its subtitle, A Ghost Story of Christmas.
Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
All right, then. Who were you?
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
Long past.
No, your past.
Come in, come in. And know me better, man. I am the ghost of Christmas present. Look upon me. You have never seen the like of me before.
In the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come? You are about to show me shadows of things that will happen in the time before us. Is that so, Spirit? Will you not speak to me? Lead on, Spirit. Lead on.
A little over 140 years old, this is one of the best loved stories in the world. It has been translated into almost every language, including Gaelic, Russian, Chinese, Japanese, and even Esperanto. Its opening paragraphs form one of the most well-known beginnings in literature.
Marley was dead, to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail.
Marley is dead. Marley is dead.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
You will therefore permit me to repeat emphatically that Marley was as dead as a doornail. Now, this must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story I am going to relate.
And even people who've never read that story know who Jacob Marley was, and just how dead he was, and have heard of Scrooge's hard-working, underpaid clerk, Bob Cratchit, and his crippled child, Tiny Tim.
How did little Tim behave in church?
As good as gold and better. Somehow he gets thoughtful sitting by himself so much and thinks the strangest things you ever heard. He told me he wasn't going to feel shy if people looked at him because he was a cripple, as it might be pleasant to them, being in church, to remember upon Christmas Day who made lame beggars walk and blind men see. He's growing strong and hearty, though, Martha, my dear. Isn't he, my love?
Then a toast, my love, my dearie, to our Merry Christmas. God bless us.
God bless us. God bless us, everyone.
The fact is, A Christmas Carol is something more than just a book. It's become a piece of folklore, a story perhaps more widely known than read. It's been broadcast on TV and radio, recorded on disc and cassette, and made into movies, plays, musicals, and operas.
A Merry Christmas indeed. What reason have you to be merry? What reason have you to be dismal? You're rich enough. Oh, why not take a merry Christmas and a happy Pasch? Oh, what a merry Christmas!
Among the august company of players who have portrayed Ebenezer Scrooge are Alec Guinness, Ralph Richardson, Alastair Sim, George C. Scott, Albert Finney and Walter Matthau. Veteran thespian Seymour Hicks and Reginald Owen, not to mention that myopic cartoon character Mr. Magoo and a duck. Yes, a duck. Scrooge McDuck, to be precise, who co-starred with Mickey Mouse, as Bob Cratchit, who else, in Mickey's Christmas Carol.
My partner, Jacob Marley, dead 7 years today. He was a good one. He robbed from the widows and swindled the poor. In his will, he left me enough money to pay for his tombstone. And I had him buried at sea.
Good morning, Mr. Scrooge.
Cratchit, what are you doing with that piece of coal?
I was just trying to thaw out the ink.
Bah! You used a piece last week. Now, get on with your work, Cratchit.
Back to work or I'll bet you nothing.
But, Mr. Scrooge, it's Christmas Eve, a time of goodwill and custom.
So it is. Merry Christmas, Cratchit.
Merry Christmas!
Now, get back to your desk or I'll bet you nothing.
Hey, Mr. Scrooge, can I go home 2 seconds early tonight?
2 seconds? You must be mad.
Have a say to the next bloke.
I'm the next bloke, folks.
The incomparable goons, who are among a chortle of comics who've played A Christmas Carol for laughs. The original book has been illustrated by such distinguished artists as Arthur Rackham and Ronald Searle, as well as spitting image model makers Fluck and Law. It has been abridged, retold, presented as a comic strip satirised by cartoonists and used to illustrate moral and religious tracts. And rather more commercially, Scrooge annually turns his hand to advertising, endorsing every kind of Christmas fare and promoting such products as that celebrated brand of lager that refreshes the parts other beers can't reach and which was once shown transforming him into, of all people, Father Christmas. And for several years in America, Scrooge had a sponsorship deal with a well-known soup company.
The makers of Campbell Soups present The Campbell Playhouse. Orson Welles, producer.
Good evening, this is Orson Welles. There are clearly a number of ways in which A Christmas Carol could be introduced. Myself, I am most struck by the happy fortune that enables us on this Christmas Eve to present Mr. Lionel Barrymore, the best-loved actor of our time, in the world's best-loved Christmas story, A Christmas Carol. And now, just before A Christmas Carol, Ernest Chappell has a special Christmas greeting from the makers of Campbell Soups. Mr. Chappell?
Thank you, Orson Welles. Day by day and week by week, you have placed confidence in us and in the foods we make. And there isn't anything we appreciate more deeply than the fact that so many of you have elected to let Campbell's make your soups for you. And so when Christmas comes, we look about to find some way to show our appreciation, some Christmas present, by which to say thank you. We get a great deal of pleasure planning and preparing this Christmas gift. And now it's ready. Off come the wrappings. Off come the tags that say, please do not open till Christmas. Out comes the card. To you, from Campbell's. And here is the gift itself.
So how did this famous, endlessly interpreted story come to be written? In 1843, Charles Dickens was just 31 years old. He'd already written Oliver Twist, Nicholas Nickleby and The Old Curiosity Shop. He was well into Martin Chuzzlewit, and he was in his creative prime.
I feel my power now more than I ever did. I have a greater confidence in myself than I have ever had. That I know. If I have my health, I could sustain my place in the minds of thinking men if 50 writers started up tomorrow.
A Christmas Carol, which was to help him sustain that reputation, contained a timely moral. Dickens was greatly concerned about the plight of the labouring poor, and he found a platform for his views when he was invited to speak at a fundraising function for the Athenaeum, an institute for the working classes in Manchester. That evening, Dickens spoke with great passion.
I could take you into certain jails and nightly refuges where my own heart dies within me when I see thousands of immortal creatures condemned without alternative or choice to tread a path of jagged flints and stones laid down by brutal ignorance.
Over the next 2 days, as Dickens went around the streets of Manchester, crowded with the poor and destitute, a story began to shape itself in his mind. A story that touched on many of the horrors and injustices he had witnessed, but focused on the hard-hearted attitude of one man.
Well, now, Mr. Scrooge, at this season of the year, it's only fitting that we who are more fortunate should raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth.
Are there no prisons?
Well, there are plenty of prisons, sir.
And the workhouses, they're still in operation, I trust?
I wish I could say they are not, but they are, sir.
The treadmill and the poor law are in full vigor, then?
Both very busy, sir.
I'm glad to hear that. I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course.
But it's nevertheless true that some additional provision for the poor and the destitute must be made. What shall I put you down for?
Nothing.
You wish to be anonymous, sir?
I wish to be let alone. I help to support the establishments that take care of the poor. They cost enough. Let those who are badly off go there.
Many can't go there, sir. And many would rather die.
Then my advice to them is to do so and decrease the surplus population. Good afternoon, sir.
Back in London, Dickens became obsessed by his new story.
I wept and laughed and wept again, and excited myself in the most extraordinary manner in the composition. And thinking whereof, I walked about the black streets of London 15 and 20 miles many a night, when all sober folk had gone to bed.
And as he worked, he poured into this little tale what he was to later call his Carol philosophy.
I mean the cheerful views, sharp anatomism of humbug, jolly good temper, and a vein of glowing, hearty, generous, mirthful, beaming references in everything to home and fireside.
What is curious is that the atmosphere of what today we think of as a Dickensian Christmas was not exactly the mood of his day. Many of the ancient traditions of Christmas had been forgotten or abandoned. But in writing A Christmas Carol, Dickens blew away the cobwebs and polished up the tarnished festive customs till they gleamed anew.
Of all the days in all the year that I'm familiar with, there's only one that's rarely fun. Correct, ask anyone, call Robinson or Brown or Jones or Smith, their favorite day, and they will say, correct, December the 25th, the dear, December the 25th, the dearest day in all the year. December the 25th, correct.
The things of Christmas are only popular because they are traditional. And the tradition has often been in need of defence, as Dickens here defended it. Dickens saved a popular institution, but he saved it not because Christmas was historic, but because it was human.
If I could have my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart. He should. Keep Christmas in your own way, and let me keep it in mine. keep it. But you don't keep it. Let me leave it alone, then. Much good may it do you. But I'm sure I have always thought of Christmas time, Uncle, apart from the veneration due to its sacred name and origin, as a good time. A kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. Therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good. And I say, God bless it.
Dickens completed his ghost story in just 6 weeks and commissioned Punch cartoonist John Leech to provide the illustrations. But his publishers, Chapman and Hall, were reluctant to handle such a small book, so Dickens, who was writing tooth and nail for bread, decided to pay for the book himself. Chapman and Hall would be paid a commission on copies sold, but the author would receive all remaining profits. With A Christmas Carol at the printers, Dickens, who was still energized by the spirit of Christmas, broke out, as he put it, like a madman.
Such dining, such dancings, such conjurings, such blind man's buffings, such theatre-goings, such kissings out of old years and kissings in of new ones, never took place in these parts before.
It was the very most agreeable party that I was ever at in London. Dickens, above all, exerted himself till the perspiration was pouring down and he seemed drunk with his efforts. Only think of that excellent Dickens playing the best conjurer I ever saw.
A hot plum pudding was produced from an empty saucepan held over a blazing fire kindled in Stanfield's hat without damage to the lining. And a box of bran was changed into a guinea pig and was the cause of such a shrill uproar and clapping of hands as you might have heard it, and I dare say did, in America.
Then, after supper, we were all made madder than ever with the pulling of crackers, the drinking of champagne, and the making of speeches.
A Christmas Carol, price 5 shillings, was published on the 19th of December, 1843.
I have endeavoured in this ghostly little book to raise the ghost of an idea which shall not put my readers out of humour with themselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. May it haunt their houses pleasantly, and no one wish to lay it.
His readers instantly took the book to their hearts, and it sold 6,000 copies in one day. The critics were virtually unanimous in their praise, one calling it a jovial, genial piece of Christmas fare. And the book had an extraordinary effect on its readers. For example, the dour Scottish philosopher Thomas Carlyle, who had hitherto refused to observe any Christmas festivities, behaved in such a way after reading A Christmas Carol as astonished even his wife.
The vision of Scrooge had so worked on Carlyle's nervous organisation that he has been seized with a perfect convulsion of hospitality, and has actually insisted on improvising 2 dinner parties with only a day between.
Turkeys, geese, game, brawn, great joints of meat, sucking pigs, long wreaths of sausages, mince pies, plum puddings, barrels of oysters, red-hot chestnuts, cherry-cheeked apples, juicy oranges, luscious pears, immense 12th cakes, and great bowls of punch.
Christmas dinner, what a repugnant, revolting institution.
It wasn't long before Dickens discovered the impact which Scrooge's history was having on his readers.
Its success is most prodigious. By every post, all manner of strangers write all manner of letters about their homes and hearths, and how this same carol is read aloud there and kept on a little shelf by itself. Indeed, it is the greatest success, as I am told, that this ruffian and rascal ever achieved.
But despite the book's success, Dickens had something of a shock when he received his publisher's accounts.
Such a night I have passed. The first 6,000 copies show a profit of only £230. I had my heart and soul set upon 1,000 clear. What a wonderful thing it is that such a great success should occasion me such intolerable anxiety and disappointment.
Ah, money, money, money.
The only thing that counts with me is money. The only thing I'm counting on is cash. The happiest time of day is when I put my coins away, lock 'em up, bolt the door and dream about my stash. As a philanthropic fella, I'm a failure. putt as a miser from a smash. The only thing that counts for me is M-O-N-E-Y. You see, the only thing I'm counting on is cash.
To make matters worse, literary pirates were already at work with A Christmas Ghost Story, re-originated from the original by Charles Dickens Esquire and analytically condensed expressly for this work.
Everybody, as the phrase goes, knew the firm of Scrooge and Marley. Though Marley had long been dead at the period we have chosen for the commencement of our story.
Story is practically the same. The incidents are the same and follow in the same order. Very frequently, indeed, the language is the same. Where it is not, it is weakened, degraded, made tame, vile, ignorant and mawkish.
There was a lengthy and expensive legal action, but in the end, Dickens was left with £700 legal costs and no recompense. On the 27th of December, 1853, 10 years after the publication of A Christmas Carol, Dickens gave his first public reading of the story to help raise money for an industrial and literary institute in Birmingham.
Look here. From the foldings of its robe, it brought forth two children. Wretched, abject, frightful, hideous, miserable. They were a boy and girl. Yellow, meagre, ragged, scowling, wolfish, but prostrate too in their humility. Spirit, are they yours? They are man's, and they cling to me, appealing from their fathers. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware them both. But most of all, beware this boy.
We have rarely witnessed or shared an evening of such genuine enjoyment. His power of facial expression is wonderful. At one moment he is savage old Scrooge, at the next his jolly nephew, and in the twinkling of an eye, little timid, lisping Bob Cratchit appears.
They lost nothing, misinterpreted nothing, followed everything closely, laughed, cried, and animated me to an extent that I felt as if we were all bodily going up into the clouds together.
At the close there was an outburst, not so much of applause, as of downright hurrahing from every part of the hall.
In addition to performances for charity, Dickens began giving readings in order to earn money and toured America, where he was rapturously received and earned as much as £1,300 a week. Dickens gave his last reading in 1870, but many other performers have followed in his footsteps, among them Emlyn Williams, Roy de Treese, Daniel Massey and Leonard Rossiter. And there have been any number of movie versions, beginning with a silent film in 1908, each attempting to present the story afresh for the silver screen.
You'll want the whole day off tomorrow, I suppose.
It's quite convenient,
it's
sir.
It's not convenient. And it's not fair. If I stop you half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, wouldn't you? But you don't think me ill-used if I pay a day's wages for no work, do you?
It's the family more than me, sir. They've put their hearts into Christmas, as it were, sir.
Yes, and put their hands into my pockets, as it were, sir. I suppose you'd better have the whole day. I'd be back all the earlier next morning.
I will indeed, sir. Thank you, sir. It's more than generous of you, sir.
Yes, I know it is. You don't have to tell me.
Perhaps the greatest challenge for any performer playing Scrooge is to convincingly present the transformation of skinflint into benefactor, misanthropist into one who loves his fellow men. For that, of course, is the heart and soul of Dickens' story, the lesson he wanted his readers to learn, and the lesson which, so long as there is ignorance and want in the world, we have still to learn.
Spirit, where are you leading me now? What dismal place is this? This mildewed tombstone, all overrun by grass and weeds. Whose name is written there? E-B-E-N-E-Z-E-R-S-C-R-O-O-G-E. Ebenezer Scrooge. No, no.
Tell me I'm not already dead. Spirit, I'm not the man I was. Believe me, I'm not the man I was. Why show me all this land beyond all hope? Oh, pity me, Spirit, pity me, and help me. Help me to sponge away the writing on the stone if I repent. And I do repent, I do repent.
Tell me that I can change these dreadful shadows you've shown me by an altered life. I'll honor Christmas in my heart, and I'll try to keep it all the year. I'll live in the past, the present, and the future, and I'll not shut out the lessons that they teach. I beg you, Spirit. I beg you.
I've got a chance to change, and I will not be the man I was. I'll begin again. I will build my life. I will live to know that I've fulfilled my life. I'll begin today. Throw away the past. In the future I build will be something that will last.
Jacob Marley, heaven in the Christmas time be praised for this. May I say it on my knees, old Jacob? Yes.
I am here. The shadows of the things that would have been may be dispelled. They will be. I know they will.
I don't know what to do. I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. Mrs. Giddy is a drunken man. Hello there. Whoop. Hello.
I don't know what day of the month it is. I don't know how long I've been amongst the spirits. I don't know anything. I never did know anything. But now I know that I don't know anything.
Hey, you. What's today, my fine fellow?
Today? Why, Christmas Day.
It's Christmas Day. I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. They can do anything.
A Merry Christmas, Ebenezer. You old humbug. And a Happy New Year. And if you deserved it.
I will take the time. I have left to live. And I will give it all that I have left to give.
This story touches the humanity of everyone and teaches us to value the very qualities on which the future happiness of the world depends. Sympathy, good fellowship, charity, tenderness, affection, and human understanding.
It will be treasured for many years to come. And like the torch of old that was handed on, it will carry the immortal message of Dickens down the highway of time.
I will start anew. I will make amends. And I'll make quite certain that the story ends. On a note of hope, on a strong amen, and I'll thank the world and remember when I was able to begin again.
Charles Dickens, someone once said, God bless him. What a feeling is this for a writer to be able to inspire, and what a reward to reap. Humbug was written and presented by Brian Sibley and featured readings and performances by, among others, Lionel Barrymore, Roy Dotrice, Albert Finney, The Goons, Alec Guinness, Patrick McGee, Mr. Magoo, Daniel Massey, Walter Matthau, Ralph Richardson, Leonard Rossiter, Scrooge McDuck, Alastair Sim, and Orson Welles.
And from Orson Welles and his considerable aggregation of dramatic talent, a Merry Christmas. How about it, everybody? A Merry Christmas.
Hey!
That's right. And now, as Tiny Tim says,
God bless us, everyone.
The readers were Norman Bird and Diana Olson. The program was produced by Glyn Dearman.
If you have enjoyed our presentation of A Christmas Carol, won't you tell your grocer so this week?